Blog Talk Radio.
Today, we have a Chief Justice of the United States and another presidential candidate, the guy who ran against Woodrow Wilson in 1862, Charles Evan Hughes, who later became Chief Justice of the United States. I was from New York. He ran against Woodrow Wilson in the 1913 election, I think. And he was on the Chief of the U.S. Supreme Court for 11 years. And it was also very interesting that they thought that he was elected president in that election, but the returns from California didn't come in. And when they did come in, their electoral votes went to Woodrow Wilson. Dean Acheson, another Democrat who worked for Harry Truman as Secretary of State, was born on this day. We had Percy Julian, who was a black chemist. He did not get all the credit or the publicity that he deserved. He worked out of Oak Park, Illinois. Paul Douglas, an actor, great voice. And then Carl Ansero, a Czech symphony conductor. We had Oleg Cassini, who was famous for designing dresses for Jacqueline Kennedy. And then Ethel Skakel Kennedy was born in Chicago on this day. She's, I understand she's quite a cheapskate. A famous anecdote about her and Robert Kennedy, they were at the Kennedy Memorial in Washington, Kennedy Center, excuse me, and Robert Kennedy was Attorney General at the time, and he said to a Secret Service agent or an aide, he said, Ethel wants a drink, you know, in other words, you pay for it. You know, she came out of a wealthy family. And it's supposed to be part Native American. We don't know how accurate that is. But there's a lot of things about these Kennedys and rich people. Reportedly, they wear clothes and then send them back to the clothier saying there's something wrong with them. And, of course, the clothier can say, well, a Kennedy wore these. This is the kind of thing that these people do. Among the deaths today, one of the worst dictators in history, you don't hear too much about him, Enver Hoxha, who was a dictator of Albania. Primo Levi, who was an Italian writer of Jewish heritage who survived Auschwitz, died on this day. Among the events today, we have, you've heard of William and Mary College. Well, during all the dynastic and religious wars in England, the English decided that they had enough of Catholics on the throne. So they invited William and Mary. William was from Nassau, a Dutch Protestant, and his wife was Mary. And in 1689, they were crowned King and Queen of England. And, of course, you have William and Mary College in Virginia. In 1814, after Napoleon was defeated, they exiled him. The Germans wanted to execute him, but you didn't do that to kings or emperors. So he was exiled to Elba. He stayed there for a while, and plotting his return to France and to retake his throne. And it was a 100-day reign. He was defeated at Waterloo. And then this time the British said, English exiled him to St. Helena, which was far away, a remote rock in the Atlantic. And reportedly he was killed by medicine containing mercury or lead. 1898, another war. William McKinley, a survivor of the American Civil War, president, asked for a declaration of war against the Spanish because supposedly they had sabotaged and sank the USS Maine, which was sent to Havana Harbor. About 100 years later, we discovered that the USS Maine blew up because of coal dust that ignited in its coal storage area. In those days, ships operated on coal. And in 1900, the United States Navy received its first submarine. In 1921, Iowa was the first state to impose a cigarette tax. And in 1951, Harry Truman fired General MacArthur because General MacArthur wanted to cross the Yalu and bomb the Chinese, and Harry Truman was afraid that we'd have a nuclear war with this. So here's an audio clip from the Brazola Carson archives.
My fellow Americans, I want to talk to you plainly tonight about what we're doing in Korea and about our policy in the Far East. In the simplest terms, what we're doing in Korea is this. We are trying to prevent a third world war. The communists in the Kremlin are engaged in a monstrous conspiracy to stamp out freedom all over the world. If they were to succeed, the United States would be numbered among their principal victims. It must be clear to everyone that the United States cannot and will not sit idly by and await foreign conquest. The only question is, when is the best time to meet the threat, and how is the best time to meet it? The best time to meet the threat is in the beginning. It is easier to put out a fire in the beginning when it is small than after it has become a roaring blaze. And the best way to meet the threat of aggression is for the peace-loving nations to act together. If they don't act together, they are likely to be picked off one by one. Their aggression against Korea is the boldest and most dangerous move the communists have yet made. The attack on Korea was a part of a greater plan for conquering all Asia. I would like to read to you from a secret intelligence report which came to us after the attack. The report tells what a communist officer in the Far East told his men several months before the invasion of Korea. Here's what he said. In order to successfully undertake the long-awaited world revolution, we must first unify Asia, Java, Indochina, Malaya, India, Tibet, Thailand, Philippines, and Japan are our ultimate targets.
Now, Truman tried to corral General MacArthur, they met on Wake Island, and MacArthur, the president, arrived, and MacArthur wasn't there. He was like the same thing that happened to Obama in Cuba. Fidel Castro didn't even show up, nor did Raul Castro. But it was a breach of protocol and respect and authority for General MacArthur not to be on the tarmac to greet President Truman when his plane landed, and Truman was furious. We'll get into MacArthur was fired, and he came back through San Francisco. They were talking about him as running for president against Truman in 1952. on the Republican ticket, but it didn't work out. MacArthur gave a speech, Old Soldiers Never Die, before Congress, and he gave one also at West Point. So we'll get to that Wednesday. One other dictator, in 1979, Idi Amin, that butcher, was finally deposed, but they're still having trouble in Africa, and God only knows if it'll ever end. Now, among the political animals and presidential candidates from Vermont, there were four. And, of course, one was born in Vermont but went to Illinois. That was Stephen Douglas, the little orator who debated Abraham Lincoln. Anyway, Chester Arthur was vice president, and Rutherford Hayes was assassinated. Chester Arthur was also the collector of the Port of New York, which was the big graft engine in those days. He succeeded Hayes, and his term in office was 1881 and 85. He didn't want to run on his own. He reportedly was, because Vermont is on the border with Quebec, there were questions as whether he was a natural-born citizen, actually born in Vermont and not Quebec. That was never resolved. Calvin Coolidge was a natural-born citizen. He was born in Vermont. And he went to Amherst, and then he went to law school. He became governor of Massachusetts, and he got national publicity because during his term as governor of Massachusetts, there was the Boston police strike, and Calvin Coolidge got national publicity, and Republicans decided to slate him on the Harding ticket. Harding was the top of the ticket. He was from Ohio, and Calvin Coolidge was the vice president. Again, it was the death of the president. Harding died here in San Francisco, and Calvin Coolidge became a president from 1923 to 1929. After he retired from public life, he became a head of an insurance company. In 2004, Howard Dean, who was born in New York, was a doctor. He was governor of Vermont and a Democrat, and he tried to run and get the nomination on the Democratic ticket to run for president in 2004. He didn't get it. Bernie Sanders was born in New York, but he went to Vermont, became mayor and an independent senator, and he is running for president on the Democratic and some people say socialist communist ticket, and it'll be very interesting. Now, note that on our Amicus Veritas YouTube site, No Bullshit is the latest video, and the new shadow in us discovered a poster here in San Francisco in an upscale neighborhood, which had No Bullshit and Bernie's smiling face on it. Now, the question is, did Sanders or his people copy Warren Hinkle's San Francisco mayoral campaign poster, which had Tired of the Same Old Shit? Now, you can see both of them at AMICUSVERITAS. YouTube. I've got this bloody cold, so bear with me. Now, the other questions, I understand there's another lawsuit, this time by a law professor. Of course, you know, just because somebody is a lawyer or law professor doesn't make them honest, ethical, or competent. You have to look at each and every one of them, especially when they're running for office or making public statements. And we'll get into that in our book, our digital manual that's in the process of being published as a digital manual called Rules for Reformer, and it's a political antidote to Alinsky, excuse me, my cold. And we get into a lot of other things that you need to know if you're going to survive as a citizen in a free democracy, in a free country. So anyway, this law professor is suing Rafael Ted Cruz, claiming that he's ineligible to run for president or to be president. Now, what's interesting, there's a couple interesting things about Cruz, just Ted Cruz himself, is that he became he's born in Canada, he can't deny that, and then he became a U.S. citizen, I think, in 1976. So this makes no sense when you look at the requirement that you have to be a natural-born citizen to be eligible to run for the presidency of the United States. So that's going to be interesting. Now, there's this other National Enquirer publication that Ted Cruz and others, and they published phone numbers, reportedly were having affairs with the Paltry, Miss Palfrey, who was called the Washington, D.C. madam. She was providing prostitutes for prominent people, and reportedly Ted Cruz's phone numbers are on that list, which was obtained by her lawyer. She mysteriously died of what somebody called assisted suicide. She was found strangled and hung, I think, in a garage. So somebody called that assisted suicide. Anyway, so if this is untrue, and other people are saying, look, if you've been libeled, why haven't you sued the National Enquirer? If this is a big fat lie, give them a chance to retract and publish a retraction. So far, there's a silence. Now, some people looking at Ted Cruz and looking at his wife, Heidi, and they're conscious of the famous film Manchurian Candidate, where there was a senator named Iceland, and he was bombastic like Cruz and seemed to be a bumbler. But his wife, Mrs. Iceland, who was the mother of the soldier who was the Manchurian Candidate, or was trained, this also has to deal with the Korean War, and she was the brains, and Iceland was the bombast and the brawn. And they were both assassinated in this famous movie starring Lawrence Harvey, who actually was born in South Africa of Jewish heritage, and Frank Sinatra. Great film. We got to see that. Also, there are other films, and we will publish excerpts from them on our websites that are very relevant, like State of the Union, The Best Man, Advise and Consent. There are a lot of great films, and of course, the Abraham Lincoln films. So since I've got a cold, I'm going to quit early. excuse me. And then we'll get into, I don't know if we should do this. We'll do it again. What the heck? We've got 5 minutes. MacArthur addresses the U.S. Congress. This is a short excerpt.
Mr. President, Mr. Speaker, and distinguished members of the Congress, I stand on this rostrum with a sense of deep humility and great pride. Humility in the wake of those great American architects of our history who have stood here before me. Pride in the reflection that this forum of legislative debate represents human liberty in the purest form yet devised. Here are centered the hopes and aspirations and faith of the entire human race. I do not stand here as advocate for any partisan cause, for the issues are fundamental and reach quite beyond the realm of partisan consideration. They must be resolved on the highest plane of national interest if our course is to prove sound and our future protected. I trust, therefore, that you will do me the justice of receiving that which I have to say as solely expressing the considered viewpoint of a fellow American. I address you with neither rancor nor bitterness. In the fading twilight of life, with one purpose in mind, to serve my country. The issues are global and so interlocked that to consider the problems of one sector oblivious to those of another is but to court disaster for the whole. While Asia is commonly referred to as the gateway to Europe, it is no less true that Europe is the gateway to Asia. And the broad influence of the one cannot fail to have its impact upon the other. There are those who claim our strength is inadequate to protect on both fronts, that we cannot divide our effort. I can think of no greater expression of defeatism. If a potential enemy can divide his strength on two fronts, it is for us to counter his effort. The communist threat is a global one. Its successful advance in one sector threatens the destruction of every other sector. You cannot appease or otherwise surrender to communism in Asia without simultaneously undermining our efforts to halt its advance in Europe. Beyond pointing out these general truisms, I shall confine my discussion to the general areas of Asia. Before one may objectively assess the situation now existing there, he must comprehend something of Asia's past and the revolutionary changes which have marked her course up to the present. Long exploited by the so-called colonial powers, with little opportunity to achieve any degree of social justice, individual dignity, or a higher standard of life, such as guided our own noble administration of the Philippines, the peoples of Asia found their opportunity in the war just passed to throw off the shackles of colonialism and now see the dawn of new opportunity, a heretofore unfelt dignity, and the self-respect of political freedom. Mustering half of the Earth's population and 60% of its natural resources, these peoples are rapidly consolidating a new force, both moral and material, with which to raise the living standard and erect adaptations of the design of modern progress to their own distinct cultural environments. Whether one adheres to the concept of colonization or not, this is the direction of Asian progress, and it may not be stopped.
That was a longer speech. We'll have that probably at the end of the week. Anyway, we'll end with our usual politics and poker, and my cold's catching up to me. Excuse me. So we'll be back Wednesday at 3:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And we'll try to have Patrick Butler pretty soon because major things are happening in Illinois. Their whole financial system run by the government there is getting ready to collapse or is collapsing. So we'll get a take from Patrick Butler, who is a real journalist who's been around for over 50 years. So we'll end with our usual politics and poker. And onward Christian soldiers. So here we go. Here we go. Politics and poker. And of course, we'll be back then. Here we go.
What do you say, Ben?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony. Up to you.
Hey, Tony,
what
are
you
going to
do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Five wine.
Me too.
Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We got to pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big ace.
Ace bets.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where's the sound?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here.
possible flush? Nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say, when you got a pair of Jack, better.
Politics and polka, politics and polka. Shuffle up the cards and find the joker. Neither game's for children, neither game is rough. Decisions, decisions, like
who to pick,
how to play, not to bet.
Where's the call of bluff?
All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Paratrace.
Bet 'em.
Little trays, good as gold.
I'll say. Raise your five.
I'll call.
I'll fold.
I'll raise your back.
I think you're bluffing.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Say, I'm in.
Gentlemen, knock it off and let's get this done.
Try Michael Panyashinkovich. I'm certain he'd run.
Mike is out. I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
How about Dave Zimmerman?
Davey's too bright.
What about Walt Gustafson?
Walt died last night.
How about Frank Monahan?
What about George Gale?
Frank ain't a citizen and George is in jail.
We could run Al Wallenstein.
He's only 23.
What about Ed Peterson?
You idiot! That's me!
Politics and poker! Politics and poker! Playing for a pot that's mediocre! Politics and poker! Rubbing neck and neck! If politics seems more predictable, that's because usually you can stack the deck!
Barbazola. We'll be back Wednesday at 3:30 Pacific Standard Time. Good night. Stay safe.